In the episode of Startups for the Rest of Us that you are about to experience, Mike and I give our thoughts, our feelings, our inspiration, what else, Mike, our perspiration on an article called The Ultimate Guide to Email Sequences. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 333. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What do you think about that new intro?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard you read the intro that fast before.
Yeah, I was trying to zip through it. What's going on with you?
Still working on doing demos and stuff for Bluetick. It's interesting. I'm talking to more and more people who want to add teams. And so far, the apps are really kind of only geared towards like single users just because of all the other things that need to go into it in terms of privacy and data sharing between different people, even within the same account. So right now we're working on trying to figure out how to extend the system to support people who are working in more of a team environment and figuring out how to essentially overlay permissions within a subscription over the top of what we've got and without breaking things, obviously, because that's kind of important. But it's been a challenge so far. So it's more about making sure that things are going well.
Right. But you do have customers that are coming on board that don't need team stuff, right? And that's got to be your kind of your short-term play while you architect or build or whatever you're going to do with the team stuff. Because it doesn't seem like teams should stop you from launching, right? Or at least it doesn't seem like it should stop you from getting to that 25 customer mark.
No, yeah. No, I'm definitely not stopping it, but it's like we have to kind of figure out how it's going to work and think about all the different places where we need to make changes. And that's really what we're doing is we're kind of planning it and trying to identify where the challenging spots are and if there's any other things that are going to need to change under the covers because of it. And then again, like the privacy issues, just because, you know, we've got access to people's mailboxes. But like, you know, just a quick example, like let's say that somebody when you throw a new email address into the system, up until that point, we don't download any of the contents of the emails associated with it. But as soon as you do, then we go back and we say, okay, well, these were all the emails that were sent and received to that email address. Now we're going to download the contents of them so that they could be then displayed inside the app. But let's say that you and I are in the same account and you've emailed your wife, for example, and I throw your wife's email address in as a contact. Well, it's going to trigger that. So should things be shared? Should they not? It's just a very difficult problem to kind of work through and think about the implications of everything. So that's, like I said, that's kind of where we're focused on. But you're right. I mean, it doesn't stop us from moving forward on all the other stuff. And I'm certainly not. My workaround for it at this point is, hey, let's just sign you up for multiple subscriptions and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's nice. That's having a workaround is huge. You know, that's what we've realized over the years is someone always wants something that you don't have yet. But if you can figure out a way to kind of get them set up in a way that is at least reasonable, you know, and they can continue to use it until you get that feature built, it's pretty nice. That's the way to get a lot of customers. And that's what I found with kind of the best sales folks are the ones who don't just listen to the customer say, I want permissions. And so it says, you know, they come to tech and say, all right, you know, the product team, and they say, all right, you need to build permissions. But it's like, no, there's probably a workaround. And like you're saying, you know, being able to have multiple accounts is one way to do that. So
yeah, I had somebody who wanted to do something and I said, hey, you know, let's get on a call. I just want to talk for a minute or two, because he was already a customer. He's like, hey, can I add somebody else in? And so we just got on a call and talked it out. And really all he wanted to do was be able to send the emails from another account as well. I was like, well, you can do that today. You don't need a full blown account or anything. So we basically just bypassed the issue entirely, which was nice because I added another user and it didn't take any real extra work on my part in terms of engineering or anything like that. It was just a quick call to say, what is it you're looking for? And as soon as I found it out, it's just, okay, yeah, let's just do this. So made it easy.
Cool. On my end, I only have one thing this week. I am about a quarter of the way through a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There, How Successful People Become Even More Successful. And the reason I'm pretty intrigued by it, it's written by Marshall Goldsmith and Mark Reeder. And one of them is like a masterful consultant for successful people. And what he's seen in his patterns over the years, you know, as he's worked with these folks, is that a lot of successful people still have like a major it's like a flaw in their personality that is holding them back. And he basically goes through the 12 that, or it's 10 or 12 that he's seen. And one of them is like, you know, you give too much feedback, or you always feel like you need to chime in to everyone on your team, or, you know, you're too negative and you always poke up the holes, or you're too casual, or there's just a bunch of different things. And what I like about it is, A, it's from his experience, you know, with hundreds and hundreds of clients, perhaps thousands of clients. And he basically says, when you tell this to a successful person that they have this issue, they almost always say, yeah, but they either deny it or they say, yeah, but that's why I'm successful. Like, I'm successful because I see the negative and everything. And that's what's, and he, so he's just starting to build a case against kind of taking these flaws and not trying to fix them. Cause that's what a lot of folks will try to do, because they say basically, no, that'll make me, you know, not who I am. I won't be as successful. But, so it's a pretty fascinating kind of topic of conversation. And as he read through a bunch of the behaviors, most of them, I was like, yeah, I don't do that. And there's a few, it's like, huh, I may need to ask some people, like, am I on the, you know, on the border on some of these?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it reminds me a little bit in some ways of Gabriel Weinberg had a blog post, I think, about how the things you do for, like, in terms of your marketing, they will work to a certain extent, and then you get to a certain point, like, and beyond that, those things just don't work for you anymore. And I can see the same thing in terms of, like, personal development, growth, and being able to lead the business. I mean, some people have that ability to create a company, build it as a startup, and then build it to 100, 500, 1,000 employees. And then there's other people who they can get to a certain point, and then after that, a lot of them end up getting forced out of the business or taking a backseat to somebody else, just because they really don't have the skill set or the personality or the capabilities to take the business to the next level. And I could definitely see myself falling into some of those categories along the way. But I think being able to recognize your faults or your inexperience or inflexibility in certain situations is probably a benefit more than a hindrance. But being able to say, yeah, I understand that, and I will try to avoid that situation, is a little different than denying it.
Yeah, and here's what I like about this book. Again, I'm only a quarter of the way through it, but already it's just surfaced a bunch of kind of anti-patterns in terms of behavior and personality. And it isn't necessarily for successful people. You know, even if you feel like, oh, I'm not very successful, like, it still is going to bring up a bunch of patterns that you should think through yourself. And that's basically what I'm doing. You know, it doesn't come off as like a super like self-help or personal development book, but that's exactly what it is. And it's doing a really good job of it, because it's making me think quite a bit as I'm listening, you know, how could I improve in these areas? So those are the kind of books that I really enjoy, I think, the ones that make me, you know, think about my own behaviors or my own motivations and get me to improve on those.
Awesome. Anything else going on this week?
Nope. I think we're just talking about this article here. I ran across it at webprofits.agency, and it's on their blog, and we'll obviously link it up in the show notes. But the article is called The Ultimate Guide to Email Sequences. And what was funny is I read through the article, and I was like, oh, this is pretty, you know, this is a nice guide. Figure we can touch on some points here, because it's a nice overview of all the different types of email sequences. And, you know, if you're not using some of them, you probably should be. I mean, these are all handy things to, you know, improve conversions, improve retention, and that kind of thing. And then once we got on the call beforehand, you were saying, oh, this is actually webprofits.agency is a Sujan Patel's company, right? They're like a growth consulting agency. And Sujan Patel is a speaker at MicroConf Starter Edition. And he's been a longtime colleague of mine. He's interviewed me several times. A really, really good guy. So it's just kind of funny how small this world is, right? Of startups and marketing.
Yeah. So let's dive right in.
All right. So the article starts off, you know, talking about what is an email sequence. And, you know, it says, let's define it. And basically, an email sequence is a series of emails sent based on preset time intervals or trigger-based automations, or both, right? So it can either be time-based, where it's like, you know, you're going to get this email, and then the next one is 3 days later, and then the next one is 5 days later, or it's going to be based on an action, like not logging into your software for a week, or clicking a link in an email, or clicking links in the last 3 emails, and et cetera. So then the next question is, why create a sequence? And the beauty of it is, you know, this is from the article, like, email sequences are automated, right? And when you use both timed and trigger-based emails, messages go out when they're most likely to have an impact. And so, you know, speaking from my experience, the reason I like email sequences and email mini courses, and, you know, I've been using these in most of my businesses for going on, well, it's more than a decade now, is because they're kind of set it and forget it. Aside from updating content when it gets stale, putting one of these email sequences just lifts whatever conversion rate you're going for. If it lifts it, it just lifts it forever. For every new person that signs up, it's an evergreen sequence, as opposed to, you know, the alternative is broadcast emails, right? Which are sent out out to kind of your whole list all at once, and they go out once, and then you have to create, you know, new content the following week.
One of the pieces of that that I like the most is the fact that it kind of calls out the fact that you can send out these emails when they're most likely to have that impact. And lately, when I've been doing my blue tick demos, one of the things that I like to call out is that there's a specific email in the sequence that goes out at 7:12 a.m., which I am almost never up at that point. I mean, I am up, but I'm not sitting down at my desk working. But that email goes out at 7:12, and so far, like, that's the one that converts the most. So there's lots of people that get that particular email, and then they come through and they sign up for a demo. And it's just interesting that, like, you can use those as different touch points when it's going to be the most impactful. And I mean, there's other situations as well. It's not just like the broadcast emails. It's, let's say somebody goes to fill out a form and you know that they went there, but then they didn't fill it out, or they abandoned their shopping cart. You know, there's a bunch of products out there that will identify who those people are and then allow you to communicate with them. Hey, you didn't finish this. Did you forget? Did you get distracted? I mean, there's lots of reasons why somebody didn't follow through with something. And most of the time, it's just because they got distracted. It's not because they went to the page and they decided, oh, I actively do not want to do this, or they see something that makes them turn away from it. It's more that something else came up that they needed to deal with and it took priority. So being able to nudge them in that direction and essentially bring them back to the table is super helpful.
So now we're going to take a quick look at the 8 different types of sequences that they call out in this post. So we'll go through them fairly quickly, you know, due to time constraints, but obviously you can refer to the link we'll have in the show notes if you want to dig into any one of these. They have examples with screenshots and that kind of stuff. But what I like about this list is it made me think, are we doing all of these with Drip, you know, and are all of them relevant? And if not, how do I get that on into somebody's queue to basically implement this? So to dive in, the first one is nurture sequences. This, you know, again, coming from the article, it says what it is: an email message or series of messages designed to help introduce subscribers to your company. These messages may be used to deliver any promised opt-in bonuses, like a coupon code or a lead magnet, and they should set subscriber expectations on the frequency and content of the messages they'll receive in the future. So I like to think of these as, you know, lead nurturing, right? It's trying to get someone a little more familiar, so they go from straight cold to perhaps a warm or an interested prospect.
The other thing that this does is it keeps you top of mind. There's plenty of newsletters that I'm sure that you've signed up for as well as I have that you sign up for them and you hear from them once or twice, and then you don't hear from them for like a year or 2 years, or I mean, even if it's just 6 months, I mean, your expectation was that you were going to be getting content on a more regular basis. And then when you don't, the person is essentially restarting that relationship every single time they send out an email. And yes, they're going to get some conversions, but at the same time, they're not really maintaining those contacts as warm contacts. So if you get an email every single week from a particular company, when you run across that particular problem in your business, you're more likely to turn to them for assistance than somebody who drops in, you know, once every 3 to 6 months and that's it.
The second type of sequence is an engagement sequence. And reading from the article, an engagement sequence aims to deepen the relationship with your subscriber. Once subscribers have absorbed your nurture messages, engagement sequences can help nudge them to take smaller scale actions that'll prime them for future conversion opportunities. So one example is an app called Pocket that attempts to engage its most active users with messages sent annually to the top 1% and 5% readers. Pocket is like an app that allows you to read offline. So, you know, annually, which is, I would almost want to do that more often, like every month or every quarter or something. Maybe monthly is too much, but every quarter, it's like you're in top 1% of readers, you know? So it's, you know, again, this is like engagement. It's a little more personalized than nurturing. And it's people who are may already be using your app, or you have some type of knowledge, you know, of the actions they're taking. Another example of this is Netflix, which offers personalized recommendations with easy calls to action, right? So I get an email every week or two, and it's like, we just added a show to the Netflix catalog that you'll probably like. And then there's always a play button and an add to my list. And I add a lot of those. I mean, they tend to be stuff along the lines of what I'm watching or what the kids are watching. And that's a way that it keeps our, you know, keeps our queue full, thus engaging us further into using their service.
I think with the example of Pocket, it seems to me a little misleading, because that's probably not the, I don't think that that's the best example that could be used here. And that's solely because it's only targeting like the the top 1% or 5% of your subscribers. And it feels to me like there's probably engagement that you could do basically for all, you know, 100% of the people who are on your list. And you can make it look more personalized and say, hey, we've got this for you, you know, just as a special gift for our reader. Like, here's a something that you might be interested in. And you can base that, like, you can split up your list in like three or four different categories. And based on things that you've either tagged them with in the past or they've explicitly expressed interest in, you can use those things to engage them. But the reality is, like, you're trying to get them to click on something to make sure that they're still active as a user. And I think that's really just a matter of making sure that you're delivering stuff to them that they want and that they're going to be interested in. Because if they're not interested in anything that you have to offer, then you'd really kind of want them off your list.
The next type of sequence is a conversion sequence. Reading from the article, conversion sequences are your big guns. You've nurtured your subscribers and advanced your relationship with smaller scale engagement suggestions. Now you're ready to ask them to take action, usually to purchase something. And so they give a you know, an example here. We did this early on with Drip. Early on, it was a failed experiment. I think our actual sequence wasn't great, but we called it our ready to buy sequence, or RTB. And we basically looked at our most engaged users and your prospects, you know, and we started talking to them about more like direct comparisons, like us versus MailChimp, and here's what you can actually do with Drip. And so it was less like high level, top of the funnel educational stuff. We started digging into like calls to action, like you should sign up for a Drip trial and here's why. But conversion sequence is definitely something you're going to want in the mix, because if you don't ask for the sale, you're just so much less likely to get it.
I think a conversion sequence is one of those places where you want to have a little bit more of a fine-grained approach in terms of who it is that you're targeting with these, so that you can take those measurements effectively. Because if, let's say, you target your entire list and 20% of them aren't well qualified, then it kind of skews your statistics. And I think, you know, most of us are kind of driven by those statistics. But if you look at that and say, oh, well, only 1% of my list converted, it's a little different if you look at that and say, well, let me cut off this bottom 80%, because most of those people, I know that they're not going to convert because they're just not in the right spot. They're not far enough along. And these are the people that we should be focused on. And then pitching it to that 20% and saying, okay, what's our conversion rate here? Do we have this correct? And trying to figure out, like, is the definition of your target prospect correct in your systems, or is it not? And that's where you start looking at those conversion rates. I mean, and it's not to say you can't look at both, like the across the entire spectrum versus who you think are well-qualified. But I think going after directly those well-qualified people is a better approach, just because you can get more fine-grained and you can identify who those people are and then use that to extrapolate where you should channel your future marketing efforts.
The fourth type of sequence is an onboarding sequence. My favorite. I love these. The first time I launched one with Hittail, forget what it did. I think it tripled, maybe even of like 5x the trial to conversion. It was some insane number. But reading from the article, you've got the customer, now don't leave them hanging. Onboarding messages ensure your new customers understand how to use the product they've just purchased so they can get full use and enjoyment out of it right away. And they have a little infographic about 7 different emails you can send. It's like the hello, welcome to our app, we can solve your problem, hey, have you tried, you know, here's a copy of an ebook. And we do all this stuff. If you haven't gone through Drip's onboarding emails in a while, I would recommend signing up and checking it out, because we've really honed that and added a ton of stuff to it. And I'm pretty sure, I think we give away like a video course in it that's really a well-produced video course. I mean, there's just a lot to it. So tons to be said on onboarding emails, but just know that of all these sequences, I actually think onboarding emails may be like the first one that I dig into when I think about a new app. It's like, how are you going to get people to actually use your software now that they've signed up?
What are your thoughts on, you know, in terms of the onboarding process itself and the emails that you're sending, customizing those specifically based on where the person is at and what sorts of things they're doing in the app? Because I think that when you look at an onboarding sequence like this and you say, oh, here's a general layout of what that looks like, and then you go to sign up for an app and they send you through an onboarding sequence. And I just did this recently with a CRM that I signed up for. And I was getting emails saying, hey, you know, by now you should have done this. And it was like 4 or 5 emails into the trial for it. And I'm like, yeah, I still haven't done, you know, step 2. So why are you sending me stuff for like step 4 and 5? It does not make sense here. But I did notice it. It like stuck out in my mind that like they're sending me onboarding emails and that's great. But like, I'm not even there. Like, you really need to be pushing me towards like getting step 2 done.
It sounds like they just had theirs in some basic autoresponder, right? That didn't have any status of what you were up to. I mean, that's like one of the early things we built into Drip is since we have liquid templating, our onboarding emails basically say, if you have completed this step, and I think we do it by tags, like if your tags include X, then display this message, otherwise display this other one. And so we never get ahead of the steps. If you've done a step, you won't get an email asking you to do that step again. And there are different ways to handle that. Like I said, we use tags and liquid, but with workflows now you could do it probably even more clearly than that, because you could just have the if thens right in the workflows. But if you don't have some type of intelligence, then you need to be really vague. Like if you're going to use a MailChimp autoresponder for this, then you kind of have to waffle around the issue, right? You can't say you have or have not done this. You just need to be more broad with it, or think about moving to a platform that has some type of automation so that you can be that specific, because you're definitely going to engage people more and get better results if you are really specific with what they have and have not done yet. The fifth type of sequence is an abandoned cart recovery sequence. And reading from the article, a would-be buyer has left something in your shopping cart, but left without purchasing. An abandoned cart recovery sequence may help bring them back. So they have an example from Shopify. And of course, I think of Jordan Gall's cart hook when I read this, because that's what they started as, was abandoned cart recovery. There are several apps out there that do it, or you could do it. You know, there's people that use Drip or use MailChimp or whatever to do it. Although I guess you kind of need some automation in order to do this well. I actually got an abandoned cart sequence just within the last week from a website that sells watches. And I put something in there and I was thinking about it and I got distracted, and it sent me a 10% coupon. It like a day or two later, and then probably a couple days later, it sent me a 15% off. And I was like, you know, I'm going to see if they send me 20%. They never did. But then I went back and used the 15%. It actually brought me back. And I was on the fence about buying the watch, but at 15% cheaper, it totally made sense. So these things, you know, not just anecdotally, you know, these things really do a pretty good job. I mean, these are going to be emails that over time are going to make you a lot of money.
Another thing you can do with these types of things, even though it's not like an abandoned cart recovery sequence, you could also use it for things like when somebody goes to like click on a link inside of an email and you know that they've done that. So maybe you have automation in place where if they click on the link, then it tags them. You know, like and I set this up in Drip for when people are going to the Blue Tick website and asking for an invite. When they put in their email address, it flips them over to another page. And if they do not fill out that form within 10 minutes, it starts them into a Drip sequence that sends them emails to get them back and fill out that form. So you don't have to limit this just to abandoned carts. You can do it for other key pieces of your sales process to get people to take that next step. Because obviously, if they don't take that next step, then they're not going to advance in your sales process. So you can use these types of automations to get them to that, whether it's actually going through and putting in their credit card information, or even just filling out a survey request or a form, or giving you more information that you need to help advance them.
Yeah, you know, and this isn't just for carts. Imagine you have a two-step sign-up process for your SaaS app, where the first step is your email and your password, and the second step is a credit card. This is what we do with Drip. If you make it through the first step, you essentially are abandoning a cart, you know, if you leave. And of course, we have a sequence tied to that, and it has had good results. So not just for selling physical goods. Our sixth type of sequence is a renewal sequence. And reading from the article, email list subscribers become disengaged for any number of reasons, no matter how many nurturing and engagement sequences you have in place. Maybe their inboxes are flooded, or maybe they're no longer interested in what you're selling. In any case, a renewal sequence, also known as a re-engagement sequence, is your last-ditch effort to bring them back into the fold. And so, you know, you could see this working if you're selling physical goods, but even with a SaaS app, if someone hasn't logged in 10 days or 20 days or 30 days, depending on how often they should be logging in based on, you know, what your knowledge of successful customers, this is a good way to do it. And it doesn't just have to be a, hey, come back. It can be when you start, but think about making this more valuable to them, like a weekly summary of stats, or a, you know, weekly summary of all the benefits that they've gotten out of your app that people can unsubscribe from, of course. But if they get that kind of a default when they sign up, not only are you reinforcing in their mind all the value they're getting out of it, but this can keep them engaged if they would be normally apt to wander off.
This reminds me of analytics applications where, you know, you connect it to some of your accounts and they give you like daily or weekly stats on how some of your different tools are doing, or how some of your different lead automations are going. For example, I think Kickoff Labs does this when like a new lead comes in. You can have them send you an email that gives you essentially a summary of all the leads that came in the previous day. And it helps them to say, hey, look, we're still providing value to you. Even though you haven't logged in, like here's the value that you've gotten out of this product. And I mean, that's a good way to essentially help remind people that not only do they have that tool around, but it's doing things for them and working for them. And it's a good reason for them to not cancel. You can also use them, as you said, to help bring people back if you notice that they haven't logged in for a while or they haven't taken certain activities. And if those activities are directly tied to the value that they would get out of the product and they're not doing them, then you can use those to essentially re-engage those people to bring them back in to help get them moving. And as kind of a secondary step, if they don't do those, then you can send them other things to help bring them back and sort of like recover them as a customer, because they're probably on their way out at that point, especially if they're not doing those key things that they need to be doing to get value.
Seventh type of sequence is an event sequence. And reading from the article, it says, like a conversion sequence, an event sequence aims to encourage subscriber action. In this case, however, that action is attendance at an event, for example, a live in-person meetup, an online webinar. Event sequences rely on both timed messages and trigger-based emails. For example, people who registered to attend the event but didn't show up.
Some of the things that come to mind for this is if you have somebody who signs up for a meeting with you or you register for a meeting with them, sending those follow-up emails, whether it's 10 minutes before and then like a several hours before, just as essentially a friendly reminder to them that, hey, we've got this call scheduled. It kind of helps cut down on the cancellations and no-shows. But you can also use this in events or situations where you've got a sale going on where it's going to end at Thursday at midnight, for example. So you can time those emails to be sent out 2 days in advance, 1 day in advance, and then a couple of hours before things end. We do this for MicroConf, actually. We've done this for years, that kind of leading up to the deadline for those things where, you know, once that deadline passes, the price will go up, for example. That's very effective. I mean, you can really get people who are on the fence or just it dropped off their radar, or they say, oh, I'll get to it later, and then they forget about it, and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they get a reminder email about it. So, like, oh, shoot, I got to go do that, because otherwise this will go away. So there's that time sensitivity to it that can really help drive the traffic and the sales.
Our eighth and final type of sequence is called a follow-up sequence. I'm reading from the article. Follow-up sequences are similar to the onboarding sequence described above, but where onboarding messages are intended for new product users, follow-up sequences should be used whenever customers complete an action, such as finishing an online course or purchasing a product. And the goal of this sequence can include things like reinforcing information learned to keep top-of-mind awareness, driving referral or affiliate sales, reiterating sales messages, sharing details on the next event, etc.
These are kind of those transactional emails that you get for accomplishing certain tasks within different pieces of software. One thing I've kind of wondered about is kind of the logistics of managing some of these, because some of the things that people might do are so disparate, and maybe you have some insight on this. If you have, let's say, five different things that you want somebody to do in their app, if you have these things in place, do you send those five after every single one, or should you wait a little while to maybe to potentially put yourself in a position where you can kind of aggregate them and say, hey, you did this, this, and this, and you put it all in one email as opposed to like five separate ones?
I think it depends on how close together those things might happen, because sending someone five emails in a day or 2 days is going to be really irritating. So I would definitely aggregate there. But if these things are going to happen once a week, or in most cases, they're going to be a week apart, then having more touch points, I think, is probably good. So those are the eight types of email sequences. The funny part is the latter half of this article is about what to look for in an email provider. And I had already chosen this article and linked to it, you know, that we were going to go through it. And then I read this section and I was thinking, what if they, like totally, you know, talk about a competitor, they don't mention Drip or something. But as it turns out, they basically, you know, they have MailChimp and Drip and Vero. And the author actually speaks really highly of Drip and says, you know, it's the one that they use. And when I see screenshots later on, it actually shows all the Drip screens of, you know, doing automation and tags and short codes and that kind of stuff. So, you know, so it's in essence an article that's supporting Drip, but that really has nothing to do with why we're talking about in the podcast. I just found the content in this article super helpful. So I wanted to share it with you, our listener.
So to recap, the different types of email sequences are nurture sequences, engagement sequences, conversion sequences, onboarding sequences. I'm saying sequences way too much here. Abandoned carts, renewals, events, and follow-up sequences. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt for We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsforrestofus.com for full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.